Morning, everyone. I'm going to hold this like some sort of tech industry guru, which I'm not. But welcome again. My name is Ryan. I'm the fundraising team leader at Prospectus, and I'm really excited to learn from this fantastic panel, who I'm going to introduce in a moment. A couple of things. I am currently playing Harry Potter Wizards Unite, level 17, and any other players of that game in the audience, let me know. My social score is zero, so yes, I am using this platform just to build more friends, so let me know afterwards if you can. And even from the discussion networking earlier, there's a huge variety of experience, understanding, and actually perception of gaming as a fundraising revenue stream, and I'm really hopeful today that you'll learn something to take back to your teams, to your organisations, and have some fun, interesting chats already. We like to run these Prospectus, these fundraising breakfasts, to create space for learning for you all, to take a sideways step outside of fundraising, the day-to-day, and really connect with excellent colleagues in the sector. And some of those excellent colleagues are on the stage today. Our panel are amazing. I'm so excited to introduce them and kickstart our discussion. Full disclosure, we have a pretty hefty number of questions, so I love you all. I'm not a mean person, but I might cut you off. We want to get to your questions as well around 9:45, so write some stuff down, engage on Twitter as well. Hashtag fundraising breakfast, FR breakfast, sure. Please do engage. A quick note too, that we won't be getting too much into the techie stuff. There are some experts on stage that can help you with that afterwards, but here we're just a space for learning and we'll get into the techie stuff outside of this room. Okay, let me start with Lucy at the end. Lucy Squance is the Director of Supporter-Led Fundraising at Alzheimer's Research UK. Since 2016, Lucy's built an amazing department enabling supporters to fundraise through their own talents and passion in the fight against dementia. Following the success of See Hero Quest, a mobile game which contributes to research on dementia, Lucy and her team are now exploring this exciting fundraising opportunity further. To her right is Natasha Stone. Natasha is the head of emerging markets and gaming for social good at Just Giving. The Gaming for Good social initiative is what Natasha leads at Just Giving, and it encourages gamers and game publishers to grow the world of charitable giving through computer gaming. Natasha is passionate about the tech industry, gaming, and everything that games can offer. To my left is Oscar Clark. Oscar Clark is a guru. Oscar is a mentor. Oscar is a mentor for game founders and an ambassador for the Gamers Charity Special Effects, and has a huge history in gaming, a pioneer in social game services since 1998. Oscar was a vision lead for British Telecom's Wireplay, one of the first online games communities, and as a consultant, he looks at game design, monetization, business modeling, and social design. A second warm-up. Now, Lucy, your favorite game of all time, and why?
This is a bit nostalgic. Can you hear me? It's a bit nostalgic, but my favourite game, and purely because it evokes awesome memories, was playing Sonic the Hedgehog for hours and hours and hours, and trying to beat my sister by collecting loads of rings and then losing them all. But nowadays, I would say I'm really into, not by choice, spectator gaming, because I have a 13-year-old who plays Fortnite and an eight-year-old who plays Roblox. So by default, I'm now a spectator gamer.
Superb. Natasha?
Sonic was a little bit before my time.
Oh, whatever. We're not friends anymore. You know that card in the post?
I mean, joking, absolutely joking. SSX Tricky, for anyone that used to play that, was my jam, PS2. Theme Park Hospital, which has made a comeback last year. Yeah, I know, yeah. And Sims, yeah. Pretty standard stuff.
Oscar,
This is where Oscar comes out.
Is this where I say I used to play Mud, a multi-user dungeon back in 1984 on my Apple IIe with a coupler modem?
What's an Apple IIe?
Yeah, exactly. That says it all. Probably best example game is Skyrim. I played over 400 hours of Skyrim and got tennis elbow from holding the controller.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. So a lot of questions we could have come up with for this session, but I want to start with you, Lucy, and I want to ask you, why should we be thinking about gaming and fundraising?
Hi, yeah. I think the simple reason in terms of why is because of the opportunity. We know the market is worth $135 billion, and $75 million has been raised for charity in the last 5 years. Most of us in this room are fundraisers. We look for opportunities. We look where the trends are. We look for where the money is. We look for communities. We look for engagement. So it's, yes, there's great opportunity in monetizing gaming, but the wider opportunity is our brand reach and ultimately messaging and impact, because the influencers telling their stories and people talking about causes, our causes, is huge and can have an incredible impact.
Amazing, thank you. And Natasha, from your perspective at Just Giving, why should we be looking at this?
I think exactly the same as what Lucy was saying. You know, we always look at the next, what is going to be the next big thing. We're always looking to try and harness something. And I think whenever we look at the fundraising world, we might be ever slightly behind markets outside of the third sector. But I think this is the first time we look at an event activity where we're actually level pegging. The whole world is looking at the power of esports and gaming, and charities are right up there with them at how they can harness influencers. I think charities are always coming to us and asking us, how do we diversify our portfolio? How do we expand and reach new audiences, younger audiences? And I think this is a brand new type of activity that anyone can take part in. It's virtual, so you don't have the overheads of paying for a physical event. Yeah. Anybody can take part, regardless of geographical location. So it's one of the most inclusive things that you can do. And there's already a pool of people out there gaming. It's a huge, huge industry. And I think to be able to just connect these gamers and say, you can do this for charity, and this is how you do it, and this is how easy it is, and these are the charities here to support you, is a great way to make that connection between an established pool.
And we will get onto the ecosystem and the communities of gamers, but does that chime with you, Oscar?
Well, I'd go further. It's like, if you're not doing it, you're too late. Well, not too late, you've got to get started now, really, is what I'm saying. You look at something like H. Bomber Guy, who, because he was annoyed with Graham Lidd, anyway, the guy who wrote the It Crowd, over the Mermaids charity and the way the lottery funds were withdrawn from them, he spent 57 hours playing a particular game, raised £340,000 for that charity. He even had Alexa Ortiz-Cortez, the US presidential candidate, appearing on his stream. This is happening without you. Mm-hmm. This is already happening. But actually, I think there's much more than this. It's very easy to talk about the streaming. There's a lot about what game development design can teach you in user engagement, in maintaining communities, building communities, but also the fact that you look at something like Special Effect. They created with Microsoft a controller which allows people who are physically disabled to play on a level playing field with other people. There's a guy out there who had a stroke when he was younger who is playing as a professional esports player on a level playing field because of the work they do.
Excellent. And I was going to talk about communities a little later on, but I think we should jump to that now to kind of expand that and not just have this big thing that's gaming that we don't know how we interact with it. So what are the gaming communities? Perhaps Lucy, you could start with your understanding of that, the different communities you and Alzheimer's have interacted with.
Well, gaming community is, I think Natasha touched on it, it's anyone gaming, it's DIY fundraising. These people are doing it anyway, so we're just tapping into what they enjoy doing. Demographic-wise, you know, it's not all 12-year-olds. There are women, 30s, 40s, who are gaming, who enjoy gaming, who are passionate about gaming. And what we've seen from our DIY fundraisers who have set up a live stream is they use it to engage and talk about their stories. So one guy, Adrian, he used it as a way to connect with his friends and wider community, to talk about his grandmother who had Alzheimer's. And actually, while he was gaming, he wasn't face to face with people, but he was interacting, and they would message, and he would message, and he used it as a way, I guess, to deal with his grief and to understand and process what he was going through, and ultimately that feel good of giving something back.
Amazing. And did you approach Adrian? Did he do it himself? What was the kind of beginning of that story?
Yeah, he, again, DIY fundraisers. So we have people, probably like you guys, who register for Fundraising Pack or call up and I want to do something. It could be a cake baking at office, a walk, a run. He is simply one of those people that wanted to do something. He wanted to raise money and do something he loved. Therefore, it felt very simple. Overlay his Twitch by just giving and raising money. And he was supported in the same way by a local fundraiser in his fundraising. So it's no different. I think what I'm trying to get across, it's not scary. It's not weird. You don't need to be technical. I didn't have a clue what game he was playing. It doesn't matter. You don't need to know the ins and outs. It's about just supporting that individual in their journey and giving great support of care and stewardship.
What other communities should we be aware of? Should the audience be aware of?
I think some of the most obvious ones are the influencers. So you guys would have heard, you know, these gaming celebrities being bandied around, and they are incredible. And some of them go on to raise 163,000. I think a load of influencers have raised, I think it's over 100 million for St. Jude's recently as well. So these guys are people that have got hundreds of thousands, millions of people that tune in every single week to watch them. So they could be streaming online, playing video games at 7:30 on a Thursday night, and they could have 2 million people watching them. So these are the sorts of communities that you guys then have access to. So talk about expanding and diversifying new pools of people. I think that's probably a great place to start. And a lot of these people usually just choose the charities. Half of the time, the charities don't even know that they're doing it for them until a huge amount of money lands in their bank. And that's when it's the charity's job to then take on that stewardship, like Lucy said, and bringing them on board as a supporter and engaging them in that way. But I think in my experience with a lot of the charities that I've worked with and a lot of gaming events that we've seen, it is your DIY, it is your influencers, but it's also corporates. Gaming is a huge, huge opportunity with corporate sponsors, and to be able to do something relatively risk-free, to be able to trial something that isn't, you know, straight out to the public, you can see what works, what doesn't work. So I think corporates is a really big untapped area, and I'm sure you'll probably go on to it as well, but publishers, developers, all of these games, people that are developing games at the very forefront are people that want to be able to give back and give back in the community that they're working in as well. So being able to work with a publisher or a developer, War Child, I think if Alex is in the room, those guys have done some incredible stuff working with games developers about promoting awareness of your charity actually in game as well. So not just looking at people playing video games, but actually channeling your messages right at the root of what they're playing so that you're getting a deeper level with these supporters in these communities.
Yeah. I mean, it's, GamesAid is an example of that. So it's a charity for games industry, which way they vote on which charities they're going to get the money that they've raised. But actually, I'm thinking with Jake in the front there, Autistica is another example where we turn this on the head and actually look at how we can look at the games industry itself, which is an area which has a lot of neurodiversity and therefore is a lot of interest in that community of game developers who want to help each other. And not just that, also things like mental health. The number of game developers who actively want to go out and make games for their kids, for mental health, for all these kind of these issues. You look at something like burn victims who now can put on a VR goggles of an icy world, and it's more effective than giving them more morphine. So there's some practical, physical stuff that happens in this. But more importantly, I'm going to be really quick on this one. How many of you have watched a live TV show in the last year? Yeah. Most people under 24 haven't. How many of you have read a newspaper in the last year? Most people under 24 haven't. Guess what 1/3 of the population of the planet do every day? They play games or they watch games. That's the difference here.
Yeah.
So, ahead of trying to contact over 2 billion people at once, I'm curious about the trade piece, the corporates a little bit more. Is there a different approach that fundraisers should take with these organisations? Is it true relationship building and making sure everything is clear and strong fundraising is done? what, if anything, should be different about these approaches?
When you say trade, you mean
corporate partners, publishers, game designers, etc.
For me, it all comes down to authenticity and shared and common goals, like any other part, you know, and partnership. We are working with a major games publisher and launching a new campaign in November, which we're really excited about. But ultimately, when we approach that publisher, it has to be about, well, how does our messaging fit? And the same with influencers. It's got to be authentic. They have to be really passionate about your cause. They have to be able to speak and articulate your mission and what you're doing so well. Because if anything, this community, this world, they'll just see through it. If it's not, totally see through it. And with corporates, if you're going to get staff involved, then it all has to be about that messaging. Why are we doing this? What's going to be the impact? How, why, when, you know, and all of that. There's also the trade industry. So UK Interactive Entertainment, they are fantastic source. Have a look on their website. They're the trade body. We're doing a games jam with them in a couple of weeks where journalists actually swap place with developers to develop a game. So what we're doing at the moment, we're not going, yeah, we're just going to chuck mud at the wall. We're saying, and I'm encouraging my team to have lots of conversations, really understand the industry, the market, our audience, what is going to resonate, what are the opportunities? Because I think there is a risk that we could go, hey, let's just chuck another product out there. This is not about just throwing products out there. It's about having the right conversations and doing the right thing for your cause and messaging and ultimately, you know, supporters.
Is it, or you all have different answers to this, I know, but is gaming a quick win or a slow burn? Natasha, what do you think?
Oh, great.
Big question.
Great question. I think yes to both, to be completely honest,
okay.
Because you could have someone that is a DIY. I mean, a quick win in the sense that you've got people already out there doing it and you might not be stewarding them at the moment, and that's a missed opportunity. So that's a quick win for you to be able to support someone as best you would a London Marathon runner or someone that's doing a trek, for example. So that's the small quick wins, mm-hmm. being able to facilitate a community that's already organically growing for you. Similarly, an influencer that is going to go on to raise £100,000 is probably a quick win. A lot of work in the build-up to that. But I think, like Lucy said, it is really important to understand your audience. There's the thing with gamers and the games industry, and I'm sure you guys find the same thing, is it is authenticity. People can smell a rat from a mile away. So it has to be something that links to your cause. So a lot of the charities that I've worked with is saying, okay, well, how can we build a narrative based on your charity and based on what you guys are trying to, you know, raise awareness for and what you're trying to achieve, and how can we then have a look at brands that have a similar mission and tie that in together. I think having a talk about the corporates and the trades and things like that, there are some quick wins in there, and we've seen that work where you might have a corporate partner and you think, actually, we want to offer them something different this year, and we want to offer them a day to do a games jam instead. Mm. So I know, speaking from a corporate perspective at Just Giving, we do fundraisers all throughout the years, and you'll have a group of people that do the runs, a group of people that do the ab sales, and it's all very separated. Now, every year we take part in Game Blast for special effect, and it's the only event that the entire office comes together. We have a half day off work where people are allowed to dip in and out of what they're doing. They can come and play video games, board games. The people that don't want to play games bake Rubik's cakes or, you know, gaming-themed bake sales. People come in dressed as Mario. Yeah. And from a staff engagement perspective, it's great because you have such a laugh with these people. Most, mm-hmm. you know, people that don't know how to play games but want to get involved or want to do something different. Mm. It's a really fun, low investment way to be able to offer something new to your corporates. You know, for people that have done Ride London every single year since its inception might want to do something fun like playing Mario Kart with their team and things like that. So there's some quick wins there that I think you can experiment and test this type of activity before rolling out a massive strategic project if you don't have the team or the resource.
And the same question to you, Oscar, on just exactly what Natasha said, that, you know, is it a quick win or a slow burn? But is the gaming industry aware of fundraisers? Are they aware of things like this? That
yeah.
all together, etc.
So it's an interesting one because there's a number of challenges. It's not one thing. There are lots of different things, many of which are quick wins, many of which are slow burns. It's choosing what is it you want to achieve first? This is the, so I do a lot of consulting. So recently we did one with a mental health group that are trying to create peer support system where you can learn to help people with depression, anxiety, all these kind of issues that really benefit from having peer groups. And how do you make sure that the people who are going to be on that group are going to be good enough to be able to be helpful? Mm. And creating a game mechanic to do that was incredibly powerful. But those guys knew what they wanted to achieve, and therefore we could design that. Similarly, we worked with Internet of Elephants. Those guys are trying to raise awareness around chimpanzees and orangutans and gibbons. So we've helped them design a location game, a bit like Pokemon Go, but you're following an orangutan called Fee, and you're trying to find Fee's poo.
Fantastic.
So each game, each thing has a purpose, and you need to go armed. Don't go alone. Understand what skill sets you need. And some of these game teams out there are desperately wanting to do something worthy. You know, we don't think, you know, games aren't just a corporate piece of software. Mm-hmm. They're art where science is involved. And, you know, the more that we can have messages that are valuable and interesting, look at things like, you know, Sihiro Quest, look at things like That Dragon Cancer, even things like Paper Please, which isn't charity related, but is about raising an issue about what would you do if you were the guard on a checkpoint and the politics around you was changing.
Yeah. Amazing. Okay. And so fundraisers go away from here today. They take all of the stuff we're doing. Fundraising directors are looking to enhance their gaming. Of course, they give Ryan a call at Prospectus 0207455. No. But what can we do with the talent? And this is for you, Lucy. What can we do with fundraising talent right away to, you know, enhance their understanding of gaming and, you know, get this skill set off the ground?
Yeah. So I, at AAK, have pulled together a project group. We're still very much in the infancy in terms of monetizing gaming. Yes, as you said, we launched the Hero Quest, which is multi-award winning. That's a science citizenship game. It's awesome. It's been played by over 4 million people now. And what it does, it looks at how we navigate to inform future diagnostics for Alzheimer's. So that's great. That was actually developed by our comms team. So we didn't have an innovation team, we didn't have a new people. This was our comms team looking at actually what can we do to understand or to get big data. How do we get big data? And actually gaming is a great way to get big data. How do we get our messages out there? So that was developed by our comms team. In the project team that I'm putting together now, so I'm just currently looking at existing skills within AR UK, and a good example would be our celebrity team. There's two. And they work with, obviously, celebrities. But their reach now is looking at, so they look at influencers anyway, but gaming influencers that talk about dementia. They talk about Alzheimer's. And we've already linked up with 4 key and really quite big names in the gaming industry just by doing what we would usually be doing. So we've not changed their jobs. We've not given them a whole new project. We've said, oh, when you're looking for these influencers, have a look out for this. Now we're launching our new Share the Orange campaign on Monday with an incredibly big Hollywood star, which I can't announce, which we're huge excited about. And these gamers have actually been part of the photo shoot. Now, a year ago, that would not have happened because we understand their reach and potential. So they will be sharing the orange, beautifully shot, mm-hmm. and they'll be sharing it with their community and their reach, which is millions, as Natasha said. Mm-hmm. So hence, the team are doing what they're doing. The comms team are looking at impact and messaging, and like we've said, War Child, how they do that beautifully. And then I've got key project managers that we're always looking for new fundraising avenues. And it's just pulling together talent across the charity who are passionate and interested in working in this area. And we've divided up into project groups. It's about having lots of meetings, speaking to people, and then coming together monthly to update as a project group. And so far, that's working really well. I haven't got, you know, I haven't as yet brought in new roles, but potentially I will next year.
Amazing. So that is super useful, and hopefully people, I can see people frantically taking notes, which is great. The feedback we sometimes get from these events is, well, it's great that, you know, there's great big organizations that have all this resource. So I'm getting ahead of you. I'm getting ahead of your feedback. What, Natasha, can smaller organizations do that are one, two, three, or just volunteer-led?
Absolutely. And to be completely honest, some of the most successful campaigns that I've seen have been led by a team of two people. So you absolutely do not need to have you know, a specialist gaming manager. If you have, then amazing, that's great. But if you don't, it's not entirely necessary. One of the campaigns that we've just launched with a charity recently, and they've had about 300 sign-ups in their first couple of weeks, was a guy in the team that had just come through. He was just a fundraising officer, not just an incredible fundraising officer, I must say. Sorry. He's insane. He was so passionate about what he wanted to do. And he came to me and he said, I'm a team of one and I really want to do this. And he said, I've got to prove it and I've got to go with a business case. Can you please help me? And we did. And we sat down and we said, right, well, what do you want to achieve? Do you have a budget? Because you absolutely, again, I personally don't think you need a huge budget at all to start something like this. You can do it for free if you wanted to try and create something to launch. But I think find those people in your organizations that might already be gamers. Yeah. Ask them for knowledge. Have someone that's just passionate about it. Or I think if you are a team of one that doesn't have someone who's interested in gaming, but you see the opportunity in this, have a little bit of research online. Come and chat to us at justgiving.com/... No. But we've developed a gaming hub. So when I started gaming just 2 years ago at Just Giving, I didn't know anything about it. Nor did anyone in my team of one. I'm a team of one, by the way. No one knew anything. And so I had to educate myself. And as a result, we've built out a whole resources section on the website that tells you just the overview of everything you need to know. You don't need to have a degree in games, whatever, to be able to understand this. And I think just have a quick research, get to grips, get to know the basics of what these gamers, what the age group is, what their interests are, how to speak to them. And I think my best advice is you don't have to have a celebrity PR team. I get on Twitter, start typing in #gaming or type on Google your charity name plus gaming plus streaming plus Twitch. Have a little look and see who's organically doing that for you. A lot of charities I've worked with have found really incredible influence, actually, just on Twitter that they didn't know were already supporting them. And they were like, oh, amazing. Yeah. You know, it's half the battle. But I think just get that basic understanding. You can find it really quickly online. Half an hour, I would have said. You can get to grips with it.
And Oscar, about talent as well. Tell us, what should good professionals in this sector, which you're an ambassador for, which you understand, be like skill set-wise? What should they aim to do?
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. We're pitching to do a training course for a particular charity at the moment about what can games do for them. Mm. And when we're looking through that, we're trying to think about it not just from the point of view of, do a game event, or which is a good thing and absolutely should. And like you say, games are an incredible vector for identifying people who are having a very vested interest in what you're doing. But it's also thinking about things like there's ways we think about in game design, like having a start condition, a challenge, a resolution, and a reward. Now, that may not sound very clever, but what that means is if you've got to understand what it is that the person who's coming to follow you, to back you, to give you money, what is their motivation? If you don't understand their motivation and what the reward is, where's the unfinished business that mean that they come back and check what you're doing? What's the payoff in terms of what they want to be? It's not often just appeasing guilt. In fact, we have so much fatigue from people filling out surveys about, feeling to blame for whatever the charitable thing that they're doing is. And instead, this is some stuff we worked with the Internet of Affluence guys, where you can use game thinking to put those people in the shoes of the scientist, the researcher, the person who's having that experience. And games are an amazing way to do that. Because games is the only medium where we don't just observe. So thinking about what you can do simply using your own resources without having to spend a fortune is incredibly important. But also knowing what you want out of it and realizing that you can build on that until you find there is a team out there that wants to do a game jam. There is a team out there who already has an amazing talent and just needs somebody to harness it. And if you have budgets, there are teams out there who are desperate to make games for the cause you want to talk about. just finding them and making sure they deliver in a professional way. And that's about bringing talent, you know, who understand game development, and not just the initial making the game, but what happens when you release it, how you keep supporting it. Because there's some fantastic stuff that's happened. There's a cancer research thing that happened where they basically digitized slides, dyed slides, and you'd play a Space Invaders-like game to basically find cancer cells. Now, it wasn't a great game. I don't know if it's still there anymore.
The reviews are in.
Yeah. But if you had had somebody making that as a game from the start, what could that have done? So that's what I'm saying. Involve people who understand what games do to be able to realize your potential. But you have a lot of that already.
And we flirted with this in every answer, I think. But I'm really keen about understanding the motivators for some of these communities to give, whoever it might be, the you know, the narrative that we've talked about, the individual story and the cause. But what are you all uncovering about key motivators that you're trying to tap into? Natasha, you go first.
Oh, God, great question.
Thank you.
I think it's a couple of things, depending on who we're speaking to. For a lot of the things that I've seen are communities wanting to get together and do something as a team, as a crowdsource activity. They want to be able to give back. For people that have a personal link to the cause, like Adrian, to be able to give back in that sort of way as well. For people that are annoyed and pretty peeved, like you said about the guy for Mermaids. There's lots of different reasons why people do this. And I think as well, when we're looking at the influencers, a lot of them will either have a personal connection or, you know, it's great for their brand as well to be able to give back. So there's that aspect as well. But I think the majority of what I've seen on the platform is people coming together as a community. It's very much a community-driven piece. People, especially when we look at, you know, Games Blast, for example, our whole company comes together because they say, no, we want to do this. We want to be able to give back, and we're doing it as a collective. I think it's very much a collective piece.
Okay.
Just to add to that, I think it's also about that value exchange. And a great example would be Breast Cancer Foundation America teamed up with Overwatch to launch Pink Mercy. And this was a skin, so it's sold online, it's an accessory.
What's the skin for everyone, just in case?
It's an add-on, it's an accessory.
Makes your character look different.
Like this blue suit,
really
perhaps.
Cool. So she has wings and pink and beautiful, and she looks very cool. So obviously people wanted their character to look as awesome as Pink Mercy did. All the proceeds went to the BCRF. That campaign alone raised 12.7 million.
Wow.
12.7 million. So, you know, we're going from, you know, your average DIY individual that might raise 300 quid to in-game purchases, and that's where the money is. I know my kids now, when it comes to birthdays, they do not want physical presents, they want vouchers so they can in-game purchases. That's the way the world moves, and they get that benefit. They want to spend their money on the game. They want to enhance their characters. So I think that's something that we can all learn from, because if we can benefit in a charitable way, in that way, that's a total win-win.
Great. Oscar.
And 12.7 million.
So in March in San Francisco, there's an event called GDC. There was a dinner there where Sam Barrett, the lead for the UN Environment Program, was talking about games. At that dinner, we had some guys from Niantic, who are the guys who do Pokemon Go and Harry Potter.
Yes.
You had people from the guys who did Subway Surfer. You had King, Candy Crush. You had a whole bunch of people like that. In the room, they represented a quarter of a billion. Quarter of a billion daily active users at that dinner. That's the scale that mobile games can do. And they were talking about doing activities to help raise awareness for environmental consciousness and finding ways to make that work. Now, think about what that means. It's not just about getting people to be aware and give something. It's about helping people think about behavior change. And behavior change is not something that the person at the end of your, you know, the player is thinking about. They're thinking about, I enjoy this game. I want to feel competent. I want to feel I can escape my normal daily routine. I don't want to be guilt-tripped. I want to be able to feel brilliant. I want to be able to have some social capital. Now that's the lever, the social capital that I get from playing and being part and seen to be part of the group that does that behavior change, but also to be able to put myself in the footprints of those people who actively act. Not everybody will be able to do something today, but to make them feel that they're part of something that is being done is incredibly powerful. And I think games is a unique place to do that. There is a caution though. Be careful when you look at mobile, particularly because Apple are not going to let you sell assets in the game. And it's not because they're mean, not because they don't believe in charity. Well, there's one something. I don't think it's like that, because I like to have to work with Apple sometimes. But it's because you cannot manage the nuances of people who misuse that. So be careful. There's ways of doing it. It's all about being careful about how you message. They're not against charitable things at all. It's just how you do it. So just be careful and get good advice.
That is good advice. Something we haven't talked about before, but behaviour change got me thinking, and I'm curious, Lucy, if you think this could be a massive can of worms. the behaviour change that might be necessary in the fundraising sector for this other stuff to happen as well. Do you think that's necessary, or is that a little bit too extreme?
I'm not sure how to answer this question. In some ways, not so much. If we just, in its most simplistic form, take DIY, and that's kind of, I'd say, the basic foundation level. It's letting our supporters do what they would usually do and supporting them. Actually, there's not really a behavioural change. Mm-hmm. It's just an understanding that this is something that people do. It's a bit like when obstacle running took off. You know, it's just something people want to do.
Sure.
But in that form, fine. I would say yes, there is, in terms of looking at working with publishers, thinking about in-game purchases, thinking about bundles, like with the Yogcast, Jingle Jam, thinking about messaging. It does have to be thought about. You can't just, you know, there's a saying goes, if you always do what you always done, you always get what you always got. You do have to think differently. You need to be working and have a project team around you that are open-minded. I often, of course, get the challenge from my executive director, but how much in year? And I'm like, this is not about that. This is a longer-term strategic project. Who knew 4 years ago the Hero Quest would be played by 4 million people and $50,000 donated by PewDiePie? At the time, I mean, that project was nearly pulled because there was no income related to it. So the challenge to everyone in this room and myself is keeping the exec team and trustees on board. Mm-hmm. And the best way I've learned to do this is I'll often present at directors' meetings and I'll talk about the market, I'll talk about the opportunity. I went to the Trend Hunter conference in Toronto last year, and that was the catalyst for me around this, to bring those trends and say, this is happening, and this is happening, it's big in the US, and it's happening in the UK by some awesome charities. We've talked about War Child, Special Effects, as well as many others. We need to be in this, but you need to understand. So it's creating that narrative, creating that understanding that can be fed up to trustees as well. It's then ensuring that you've got a structured project group around you, and that progress is being made. And that progress potentially will be slow. It's better for it to be slow and steady and have a clear direction than just go, we'll do a DIY weekend where a game marathon, just set up a website. I think it's bigger than that. I mean, that is an option, and that has worked for you know, a number of charities. But I think there's so much opportunity here. I don't think we've even scratched the surface. And your cause, how it could resonate to different publishers or individuals, is there's so much opportunity. And I think you need that big innovation ideas session to go, well, we have, this is our USP, or this is our mission, this is our vision, this is our talent, this is our resource. What are the options here? And just pull out some threads. So for us, it's about developing new income streams, it's about supporting engagement and education, and it's about our brand reach. So we know there are broad themes, And then breaking them down, it's influence, working with influencers, working with publishers, developers, and trade, and then working with DIY. So it's actually, what is the opportunity? What does it mean for us as a charity? And what could that look like a bit more tactically, those objectives? And then what teams, what individuals are going to deliver those? And although this was thought about obviously last year, it had to be worked into ops planning this year. So I'm not just going, hey guys, I've got a great idea, let's all crack on with this. I did get reined back. So I was reined back and it was put into ops plan, and all the relevant teams had it, you know, had this is what we're going to do in ops plan. We do not, I'm not sitting here with all the answers. I'm not sitting in here saying we've raised, you know, millions, but I'm sitting here confident that we are having the right conversations and doing the right thinking around this. Hope.
Excellent. I really want to join your team, Lucy.
And you're an awesome team.
Natasha, back to my question around behaviour and in the fundraising sector and if that needs to be challenged or changed. Are you anticipating that with new client briefs? Are you educating as well when you're meeting people for the first time? Your experience on behaviour?
Absolutely. So I think what's been a really nice thing to see throughout this process is that people are actively coming to me and saying, I really want to do this, I don't know what to do. So in my opinion, the behaviour has changed because people aren't as scared about virtual as they were maybe, you know, a year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago even. People are coming and saying, I'm excited by this, but I don't know anything about it. So a lot of my role is education, saying, okay, well, this is the market, this is the sector, this is what we've seen, and this is how you might be able to do it in your team. So we often get quite involved. I'm saying we. I often get quite involved. I like to imagine I've got a team of people behind me. I'm sure everyone else does the same. But get involved in those ideation sessions with charities and say, okay, well, you guys have got this idea. Did you know that there's something like this? Or this is what someone else has done. This is how you can do it. But I think hopping on the back of what Lucy said, in terms of behaviour changes, that real thinking outside the box attitude, I think, is what is going to set charities a million miles apart at the moment. So you think about what Oscar was saying, you know, if you're not in it, you're too late. I don't think it's true. But in terms of thinking of, okay, we've got our games jams, we've got our marathons, we've got our working with developers on games, what is next? And I think that's something I get asked daily in my job. But it's one of the things that I think is really interesting to look at, and that not many people have done so far, is looking at esports and looking at the connections that you guys already have. So, for example, you might not have any games industry contacts, but you might have a football team that's a corporate partner of yours. Most of the football teams in the industry at the moment are investing in having esports teams. So they are people like West Ham, I think, or Man City, I think, were the first team to do this. They've got their physical team that go and play with the ball. And then you've got their... I'm sorry, I can come on, guys. I can only be good at one thing. or you've got your Man City esports team. So they're a team of people that go and play as Man City virtually. And so that might be another way in for you guys. It might be going up to your football team and saying, hey, have you thought about having an esports team? Because if you haven't, you should, and we'd like to be your sponsor. Or we want to be on the badges of the arms. We want to be on the skins of the T-shirts. It's thinking like that, or looking at your corporate partners and saying, well, have you thought about doing this? Mm. And pushing it back to them, challenging them. I think that's the biggest behaviour change that I think when you look at the people that are pioneering charities in this sector at the moment, that's what they were doing 4 years ago. They were going to the industry and challenging them and saying, actually, we want to be involved. What are you doing or what can you do for us? I think is the biggest switch, I'd say.
I mean, I'll build on that. So, I mean, first thing is I'm secondary connected to almost everybody in the games industry. So, you know, that's step one, talk to me. But it's actually more sensible than that. It's actually thinking about this in a different way. So it's not to your... Do you know about all the possibilities that you were saying there earlier? For example, one of the biggest things that has been changed that's really taken mobile games in particular from being a kind of poor cousin to being the biggest, most significant part of the games industry has been data. We collect a lot of data. Now, obviously, professionally, you know, we're not talking about exploitation, inappropriate use of data. We're talking about properly, you know, authenticated, secure, anonymized, all up to standard GDPR. But the fact that we know what people do inside a game in a way that you can never know about their reaction inside any other medium, that's incredible. That's why we can make behavioural change in ways that are unthought of before. But equally, we can look at people's behaviour over time. through that game. So for example, if you've got a story, we can see how people's responses change to that over time to see if we're having an effect. And stories are the most powerful way to communicate any kind of messages. And when you can get this education of what's possible through play, that stays with people in ways that no other medium does. So I think you talked about behavioral change, but what I want to try and get across is that there's a lot more rich opportunity about the methods that games can deliver that you may not have thought of. Like, for example, what is the UX of your fundraising pages? Have you actually thought about the flow of the user in terms of how they feel, what reward there is, what emotion there is, what payoff there is, what gets them to go back to it? Mm-hmm. That's the sort of thing that game thinking can deliver to you. And if you can do that working with games teams, who knows what's possible?
Wow. So that's our discussion for now. 9:45, I'll hand over to Femke. Thanks so much to the panel.
Thank you so much. That was really interesting. I hope that you've all got a couple of things that you can take away from today. So on to questions from everyone. As I mentioned earlier, Slido, you might put some questions through there. So if we do have anything that's been popular, Ryan will come to that as well. But if you would like to ask a question, just put your hand up, name and company that you work for. Thanks.
First question right here, please.
Hi, I'm Rachel Groves from the Sumatra Orangutan Society. Very interested in the game you were talking about, about the orangutan finding food. What was the organisation and what's the take-up
being like? Well, it's not released yet. They've got a game they've just released called Safari Central, where they've got six different animals you can create in the environment around you. This particular game should be launched with... one of the zoos, I've forgotten which zoo it is. Chester Zoo, I think it is. And that should be coming some point this year, but we're still waiting on the... I was just the designer of that. They've gone on and carried on building it. They're actually based in Kenya, but I can provide you with more information on that and introduce them.
Great. There was a question on the left. Yes, hi.
Hi.
So the question is, this is a really great question, the equivalent to sending out packs and balloons and things like that in a community fundraising setting.
Natasha.
Natasha.
Nice to meet you in person, Jess. So we've worked with a couple of charities, a couple of organisations on this. Most recently, we worked with BT on a campaign called BT Gamer. They wanted to give out discount codes, free merchandise, so discount codes for games. You can work with a lot of publishers are always willing to give away free stuff to charity, whether that's an early release or a promo code or anything like that. Something that the guys are really going to be interested in receiving. Headsets, technical equipment, if you can get most of that from an organisation for free, but also badges are a really great way to reward people. I know that, Lucy, you've seen this with Running Down Dementia and the like as well. Yeah, the gamification of it as well. So we've just launched Game Heroes with Macmillan and we've built a bespoke site for them this year. And what we've built into the fundraising page, again, talking about the UX of the fundraising pages, is we've actually built in milestones. So when you connect your Twitch account to your fundraising page, you'll instantly get a badge. And I think there's 10 or 15 badges that you can collect based on funds raised, how many hours you've gained, whatever metrics you want to be able to challenge that by. And we did that for BT Gamer as well. And we saw some real success with that because people love to collect stuff, especially when you look at gaming behavior. It's about getting to the next level, collecting the next item. That's the mechanics behind fundraiser, behind gamer behavior. So if we can bring that into the fundraising life cycle, I think t-shirts and stuff like that is still great though. Being able to say, the first person to reach X amount receives a t-shirt. We take the same principles from the fundraising mechanics that we use at the moment of offering incentives for monies raised and things like that, but just gamifying them. So whether that's a digital badge, if you can't get merchandise to be able to give back, or if you can't get discount codes, but I definitely tap up any publishers, developers, games, organisations to see what stuff they can give you for free.
And the influencers as well. If you're working with an influencer, they will usually come up with a code or, if you donate X, they can offer X. So that's what they do. That's how they work. So they're great to have those conversations with, because they'll come up with their own.
I mean, digital goods are incredibly powerful, and achievements, like you said, one of the things I'd be careful of. I mean, gamification is a term that was brought up a few years ago. It often ends up being about points, and that tends to be death. It's just horrible. But if it's meaningful, mm-hmm. like you're saying, I want to show off that I was the first person to back this of my social group. If that becomes meaningful, then great.
Mm. Yeah.
But also, you know, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that you could potentially do with it. Even things down to Discord. So there's a whole bunch of games that have their own Discord chat groups, and they have a tag, a role. Mm-hmm. Well, why not have a specific role for a charity?
Yeah.
Sure. There's avatar outfits and so on and so forth in so many games. There are badges in so many games.
Badges on Twitch as well. I know that we were working with Twitch quite recently. So Twitch is one of the major streaming platforms that people go to distribute their streaming out live. You can get badges next to your avatar on Twitch, and that's a really big thing. And also getting emotes as well, which are like emojis, I suppose. And you can get certain emotes. For example, if you follow a specific streamer and you pay to them on a monthly basis, you might get one of their special things. So you're part of this community, you're part of a select group that have that. And Twitch were working with us to see whether we could get a special charity emblem. So if you were taking part in a charity event, you'd be able to have this emote or this badge. So it's, again, taking Excellent. A look outside of the box of what else you can do.
There is a question at the back on the right. First, yeah.
Hi, Emma Radley from Winston-Swift. We support bereaved children through, they may have been bereaved through any means. One of the issues I'm facing at the moment is obviously a lot of streams, there's an element of violence in games. And we deal particularly with children who are bereaved by homicide.
Yeah.
And it's trying to get past that barrier.
There's some great metadata analysis of violent crime versus games. It shows an inverse correlation. Basically, there are a couple of minority reports that still claim there's some connection, but the vast majority of the analysis shows that there isn't any real connection between games and violence, particularly because there seems to be a clear observation that there is a knowledge that you're in a game that is different from being outside a game. There is some analysis which talks about enthusiasm and over-energy, which can become, will look a little bit like aggressive behaviour, and in some cases can even be aggressive behaviour, particularly amongst vulnerable people who have other issues. But that's more a case of, argue parental responsibility, but it's more a case of context. Like all these things, at the moment there's a particular issue where WHO, the World Health Organization, has, I think, incorrectly identified gaming disorder, and they're correlating correlating it to gambling. The psychology and the brain chemistry is very different, in my opinion. There's lots of evidence to show that's the case. And the UK Interactive Entertainment Group are currently championing to have that removed. So there is clear evidence that gaming is good.
Mm-hmm.
There are some fringe areas where we need to show responsibility. But we know that with transparency and with good context, gaming is an incredibly positive force for self-confidence.
And is there anything else senior fundraisers can be equipped with to go to their boards? To the question.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've worked with a number of charities that are in a similar position where, you know, they might be campaigning against the types of activity that's displayed in game. And a lot of charities that I've worked with have said, okay, well, we're going to explicitly say that we don't want people to play those sorts of games. So in the challenge, they specifically specify what type of game to play. So one charity, for example, is doing an activity just purely around motorsports games. So they're saying, we want you to play Mario Kart, play Forza, play whatever you want to play. So they're building their whole challenge around something that's a specifically not violent game.
I'm really glad the question came up.
Yeah.
Thanks for your thoughts. Time for two or three questions. There was a gentleman at the back first, further back, sorry, in the red jacket. Yeah.
Hi, Richard from Sun Games. We actually find games charity. So these are sort of interlinked questions I want to ask. One is, how do you make sure that all funds raised actually come back? The charity, you know, full transparency, that seems to be a big risk. So if you flag that to us as well. And yeah, you're saying you're finding
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then two, also from some of the games where they're actually more designed not just for fundraising but more closely aligned to your charity, if you've actually got data on the impact that's had in terms of engagement, loyalty, improved understanding, particularly that people better understand what charity does, so they're more likely to donate and support. Mm-hmm.
So a two-part question around funding and transparency, how that is, you know, like any fundraising stream, I would imagine, how that's tracked. And second part of the question, if I understood it correctly, and we will zoom through this, is around how that storytelling enhances understanding of the cause. So Lucy, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I would say that's why I'm so grateful for Just Giving, really investing in this area, because now we do have a platform to encourage gamers to use. So the funds absolutely do come direct to the charity, as with any other online fundraising. And if anything, it's more transparent than somebody doing a collection outside a supermarket, because it is direct income, which is so that's great. In terms of your other question, was it around impact?
Impact and the game actually enhancing it through data. Yeah.
So actually, I think Oscar, what you picked up on earlier around people playing these games over a long period of time, we can acquire such rich data in terms of how they navigate, their thought process, what they're thinking. And a lot of charities, especially retail charities, we need that data. We need to understand our supporters more, and for us to then be able to feed that into our research. So the Sea Hero Quest is actually one of the largest dementia research studies ever to have taken place, with 4 million people. Now, we couldn't have done that without the game. And that data all goes back to our labs to help inform diagnostics for the future. It's not diagnostics now. Obviously, all that data is over time. Mm. And of course, that messaging. So with any good game and any good narrative, it's around the comms and how it lands. So Sea Hero Quest, the opening, is a beautiful animation. My kids actually thought it was a Disney movie, where you see the boat and the sailor. Yeah. He's the dad. And the son talks about his dad's diagnosis with Alzheimer's and his memories and slipping away one by one. And they're like pictures that scatter across the sea. It's so moving and beautiful. But it helps people understand what it is and that it's a disease. It's not just an inevitable part of aging. So if we can have a game that talks about this is what it is, this is why it's a problem, and you playing this will help us understand our brains, the most complex organism in the universe, you are doing your bit for science, and hopefully you are understanding why, then that helps our comms mission. There wasn't a direct ask off the back of that, because actually it was about research and about communication.
See Hero Quest is stunning. Google it on the way back to the office, watch the video, it's amazing. We have time for one more question in front here. Could you speak up a little bit? Sorry, and your name and where you're from?
I'm Nico, and I'm from the NSPCC, and I was hoping that Oscar maybe would point us in the direction of where there's metadata also on grooming and bullying, as well as
Let's talk about that later. I don't actually the comment I was going to make. Sure. Actually, we have an issue at the moment that we're not sharing data in games teams very well, and it's actually arguably down to the fact that the way data is being shared at the app stores, Steam and Apple and Android and PlayStation and so on and so forth, aren't sharing information about what people are doing. But there is a fundamental question about how we deal with that. So I think this is something which we need to sort of find a way to work with people like yourselves to make sure we get that data. Mm-hmm. And in particular, this is something which we used to do. When I was a mobile network operator at Three, all of the operators for the mobile phone networks were sharing data, and now no one does.
Right. Okay. Well, that is all the time we've got. I really hope that was useful. We have recorded this session. We'll send it out. So you will hopefully we can get some of your questions answered. I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone, but a round of applause for our panel. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We'll be in the rest of the